Hello and welcome to Travel Genius. I'm Mark Elwood.
And I'm Nikki Eckstein. We're the Travel Geniuses.
Yes, we are. This week, we'll be talking about forbidden travel, the places we're banned from visiting, and what drives our urge to maybe break those rules.
Plus, we'll be joined by Curtis Stone, the celebrity chef who's gone from cooking in strangers' homes as the take-home chef to judging Top Chef Junior, to running a small restaurant empire in Los Angeles, and of course losing count of his frequent flyer miles in between.
He will tell us about his dirty packing strategies. Think about that. Teach us how to find the best restaurants that don't have crazy reservations policies. And as only a great chef can, spill the beans on hacking room service.
All that and more on this week's episode of Travel Genius.
Okay, we've talked about where not to go in another episode. We talked about over-tourism. And if any listeners haven't heard that discussion, you'll hear that in episode 2. That's the Philippe Cousteau episode. But we want to talk a little bit more seriously about another reason not to go places, which is really drawn from a story that some of you may have heard from the headlines recently. Nikki, refresh us with what we're talking about.
Sure, Mark. So there was a guy, we'll call him a tourist for our purposes, but his name was John Chow, 26-year-old, Instagram influencer, and also very notably a missionary. So his travels were just driven by different purposes than many of our normal vacations. He ends up on India's archipelago, the Andaman Islands, which, by the way, we have called an up-and-coming hot destination, notable for some really amazing scuba diving, great resorts that are opening up there. But he ends up on one particular island that is very well known by the local community for its indigenous population that has been shielded from the modern world. And he wanted to be kind of a colonizer, if you will, somebody who could go and evangelize, knowing full well that people who have normally stepped foot on this land have literally been hunted down with bows and arrows.
I mean, this tribe will murder intruders, and we're supposed to stay away because it's not just that our modern technology could change their way of life, but the diseases we carry, they're not immune to. There are reasons that we're told not to go there over and above some kind of controlling nature of the Indian government, right?
That's right. So unfortunately for John Chow, his fate was fairly predictable and took a turn for the worse. He did not make it off of that island. And it really does serve as an interesting lesson and spurs an interesting conversation for us to think about how we handle places that are full of intrigue, cultural intrigue, but may or may not be wise to visit.
Well, I think it's interesting because where we should and shouldn't go is a really hot topic because it's emerging as a bigger issue for two reasons. One, it's much easier to reach those far-flung destinations, but you made a very key point. What got lost in a lot of the John Allen Chow story, because it was so horrifying that this poor man would be murdered, was that he had a mission that was very modern. He was using Instagram as a way to get followers. At the time of our recording, he's got 18,000 followers on Instagram. It was the hashtag missionary life, taking the gospel of Jesus out using a modern platform. But again, what he was looking to do was gain traction by going somewhere unexpected to get attention as well as spread the word of God. And that's the tension I think we're really uneasy with, right?
So there's two things here, exactly as you're saying. One is this idea of social media driving us and how social media has, in some ways, changed our behavior as travelers in a way that maybe makes us act irrationally to gain attention. Mm-hmm. I think that's one key thing is, if you didn't gram it, did it happen?
Yep.
And how do you prove your chops on social media if it's not by doing something that nobody else has done before you? Where do you find those bragging rights? Some people have really taken that in the wrong direction. You know, you've got the bad behaving tourists that were looking for a great selfie in Red Rocks and defaced a cliff. You've got people in Italy in the town of Cremona who outrightly damaged a sculpture of Hercules from the Renaissance era by hitting it with their selfie stick. The stories go on and on and on.
And let's not forget, he's not the only person who died. There was a study in the Journal of Family Medicine and Primary Care where at least 259 people died in the 6 years to November 2017 while snapping selfies. So in other words, we joke about how absurd we are sometimes doing it for the gram, but we're seeing real consequences to people not thinking. And I think that's what the John Alan Chow story really resonated with. We're trying to get somewhere no one's been, something no one has, and it's a reminder that maybe we should dial it back a little.
Okay, so totally valid point, and I agree 100% with everything that you're saying, but there is also this desire to go that somewhere that no one has ever been from people who are not driven by social media. I know that some of my relatives have gotten so sick of the crowds who are all looking for that iconic social media moment that all they want to do is escape people, go where nobody is going. And of course, there's kind of
Should we call that misanthropic travel? I feel like that's a whole other niche.
Well, I mean, of course, in this political climate, people are really overwhelmed and they're looking to unplug in many different ways. That means a lot of things to a lot of people. We can't pretend that we are discovering places. We have to recognize that even if our friends and family are not visiting the remote island off the coast of India, there are people who live there and who believe things and who live a lifestyle that we would be imposing ourselves upon.
I think it's, again, there's a whole other discussion about the, I know that editorially we're all very aware of not using the words like undiscovered and untouched because they have very complicated colonial issues.
Correct.
It's not undiscovered to the people who live there. We're looking for, I think we can't, again, you're like your father-in-law, I can't blame people for trying to get away, get a fresh experience. But it does, I do want to remind everyone, the State Department has a new series of warnings, a four-tier warnings that tells you where it says you can go with impunity. And level four, that's level one. Level four, red, are the places the State Department tells you not to go.
In other words, we can't help you.
Exactly. This is my point. You don't want to be in, and just give everyone, if anyone has plans to go to these places, maybe you should pivot. Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, South Sudan, North Korea, Libya, Mali, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, and the Central African Republic. Have you been to any of those, Nikki?
I have not. You know, I really want to go to Iran, but I'll wait until it's not on that list anymore. And I have to say, just because a place isn't on this list doesn't mean that you shouldn't tread with caution. I think a really important thing to consider is when you're going somewhere that's an uncommon destination for travelers, you need to do your homework. Even if it is common for travelers in other parts of the world, but you don't know many people going, the onus is on you to know that you are traveling there responsibly, which means don't do it by yourself. Do it with the help of a local guide. Do it with the help of a local operator that you know has a philanthropic commitment to serve the people of that area. Make sure that where you're going, you're contributing.
And I would also say, to sum it up, I would remind us, you know, John Alan Chow went to an island that until recently was banned to visit. Earlier in the year, quite controversially, the Indian government did lift that ban to visit certain parts of it. Remember, just because you're allowed to visit somewhere doesn't mean you should. I would think long and hard about visiting an island like that, knowing how many complications and the impact I could have if I arrive there.
Of course. And I will say, I think these remote civilizations, both in India, in the Indonesian archipelago, in the Myanmar archipelago, are increasingly attractive to tourists. But the key is, go with somebody who speaks the language, so that if you do end up in a tricky situation, there's somebody there to diffuse any tension. Ideally, you're going somewhere where they're expecting you to arrive, even if it's remote. Don't surprise people who aren't used to welcoming foreigners from another land. It's just common sense.
It's just common sense should probably be our mantra whenever we travel. Frankly, I would say, do you know who I think is full of common sense?
Who?
I would say this week's guest, Curtis Stone. He cut his teeth. I mean, not that I'm biased, but he did cut his teeth as a young chef working in London under Marco Pierre White. He's had his talent recognized by Oprah. Oprah, let's take a moment. Oprah. And now he runs between all of his restaurants in the world. He's from Melbourne, so he's got a restaurant there. But of course, you may know him better from his restaurants in LA.
And of course, you know, we've talked to him a little bit about his travel habits, and he says that he's lost track of how much he flies. But based on what he's told us and his rough calculations, we've tried to do the math. He's at least clocking 130,000 miles a year. This is no joke. So he's got some serious tips up his sleeve.
I don't believe people who say they don't lose track of their miles. I tally mine like a little miser.
Like
putting
a religion.
Piles of coins like a religion. Anyway, let's bring Curtis in.
Curtis, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Travel Genius.
My pleasure.
Okay, Curtis, brace yourself, because before we dive in, there is a procedural rule we didn't tell you about that you're going to need to know.
Okay.
Since you're on Travel Genius, we're hopefully going to get some really genius tips from you, and whenever you get one, you're going to hear a sound. What sound is he going to hear, Nikki?
Just this little sound right here.
Oh.
That's our hotel bell, and at the end of the episode, we will tally it up to give you an absolute genius score. Nikki's the adjudicator.
Yep.
I'm tough.
So she's tough. I'm just here to settle disputes. So you really need to play to her, not to me.
Gotcha.
So let's dive in, Curtis. We're going to give you your chance to get your first point right now. I know for a fact that you have a funny habit when you travel, which is that you pack only dirty clothes. This
yes.
is the opposite of what I think anyone else listening might do. But tell us why we're all wrong and why you're right.
Well, look, when you travel, you scrumple up all your clothes, right? And as soon as you arrive at your hotel, you have to get the ironing board out and you have to iron your stuff, or you have to throw it in the laundry. I'm a terrible ironer and I'm too lazy to do it. So as soon as I arrive, I usually throw all my clothes down to the laundry to get ironed and laundered. So, well, just to get ironed, you know, this is what I used to do. And I thought to myself, I take clean clothes, they get screwed up, and then I have to send them to be ironed. So why not just take dirty clothes and throw them in the laundry, and then they'll come back clean and ironed? So that's my strategy.
Are you telling us that you're just really bad at folding?
You know, you can. There's nothing
exactly.
worse than a dude in a shirt with those funny creases that you get from folding.
But I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a cynic, but do you swear that you really do? I think it's brilliant if you do it, but this is the kind of thing I feel like people pretend they do and then they bottle out at the 11th hour. Do you
no,
really
I do
this?
I
does your
do.
Wife let you do this? Does she not
my
know
shirts.
Why you
She's happy because then she doesn't see them in the laundry as often, and I travel a lot, but I don't do it with my jeans, my trousers, because, you know, they're easier to fold and, like, you don't need to iron those, but I definitely do it with my dress
shirt.
And I don't
shirts.
Do it with T-shirts, but I do it with shirts.
Okay, I want to talk to you, Curtis, about when you travel, because you have a very clever trick, basically to hack your way into getting a chef's recommendation in a new city. Tell me what you do, because this is quite sneaky, but it's sneaky in a way that I think is kind of like good guy sneaky.
So this happened totally by accident the first time, but it is a trick that I've used a couple of times since then. I called a restaurant that I wanted to go to. I tried to make a reservation. They said, oh, we're closed on that day. You're looking for a Sunday reservation. We're actually closed. And I was like, oh, well, I'm a chef. I told him which restaurant I was working in. And he said, well, let me speak to the chef and see if he has any recommendations. You know, because I couldn't go any other night. I was in Amsterdam, actually. I was only there for one night. So then the chef called me back and he said, here's what I'd do. I'd go to this place or that place. And he sent me to this fabulous restaurant that I never would have found had I not called the restaurant and had the conversation with the chef. So I have done it again since, where I've called a chef or a restaurant that I know is closed and asked them where I should eat.
So wait, so break this down for me, because I think this has happened to me actually multiple times. Either the restaurant is closed when you want to go,
mm-hmm.
or you happen to be there, you know, you plan a trip last minute, you can't get the reservation that you want, because we're normal people, we're not chefs, right? So we can't just call the chef and say, hey, fix my problem for me. So how would this work for our listeners and us?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if you call a restaurant and say, look, I know you guys are closed, I would have loved to come eat with you, but where would you suggest? They're going to send you somewhere that's pretty like-minded. Like, if you're thinking mm-hmm. gastronomy and you want to go somewhere super elevated, they'll probably send you to other places that are on their playing
so
field.
In other words, even if you're not only in town on a Monday, the mm-hmm. way to get a recommendation from that restaurant is to say, I know you're closed on Monday. It's my one night in Amsterdam. Where else would you send me? And
yeah.
suddenly, you have your own personal zagats. I think
that's brilliant.
I'm
yeah, I was.
Yes.
Listen, I was.
Your fingers weren't near enough
there.
To the bell.
All
I
right.
was like,
Mark, you know, I'm not going to start a fight over this, because you're right. That 100% deserves a ding. I love this tip. And I wonder not just how well it works for getting recommendations. I wonder how well it works in terms of getting sympathy points with the host and maybe sometimes getting the reservation that you actually wanted all along. Does that ever happen?
That's a good idea. I've never tried that, but it's a good idea.
Nikki always, every time someone comes up with a sneaky idea, Nikki's always like, could you get a little sneaky?
Can we get sneakier?
How much sneakier can I make it?
Philippe Gusteau's fake Rolex and all.
You know. So, okay, talk to us. There's another thing. Because you're a chef, you've got all sorts of food strategies that I know everybody will just be dying to borrow for themselves. And room service is another thing that I know you're going to just unleash a bunch of wisdom on us and change our lives forever.
Look, it depends what you're ordering room service for. If you're hanging out and watching a football game, or you're with your wife or whatever, that's one thing. But if you travel as a big part of your life, which I do, then you want to try and eat healthy, right? And, you know, one thing that I often do is I don't open the room service menu. I call down, I ask them what the soup of the day is, or I ask them whether I could have a salad with the dressing on the side and some chicken. You know, I'll just sort of tell them what I'm looking for. And usually they'll do it. The problem with opening the menu is you see hamburger with fries and bacon and cheese, and you see, you know, a club sandwich or a steak sandwich, and you're like, I want all that. So then you get tempted into ordering it, where if you just go in there, tunnel vision, and say, I'm just going to ring him and get a bowl of vegetable soup sent up.
It also means, I always think that if you order custom rather than off the menu, it does force the kitchen to make it fresh, because all the stories I've heard about things sitting around.
Who's making a sneaky tip sneakier now?
Who gets the ding?
That's
double
two dings.
Double
that's a ding for Curtis and a ding for Mark.
Nice.
Wow. Thank you. I don't often get points. I had a hotel chef, a chef who works with hotels and provides F&B, say to me, you know what the kitchen will love you for? Just asking for no garnish. Because garnishes are the things that all the room service people have to pick up and look for. And if you say no garnish, it communicates something about how you're probably part of their world. And so they'll take more care on your food.
What do you make of that, Curtis? You've worked in a hotel before.
I have. I'd give that a ding, personally.
Really?
I think that's
a ding from Curtis tomorrow. The dings are going in every direction,
Curtis,
today.
Two, you've got two, I've got two.
Oh, no, this is race now a competition.
Talk to us about your in-flight rituals. You are the person that everybody would normally hate until you actually prove to them that they shouldn't hate you. You talk to your seatmates.
I do. Yeah, I'm one of those guys.
You're
I'm like,
that
hey,
person.
How you doing?
Why? Why on earth would you do that?
Well, I mean, you got to spend the it depends
space.
On how long the flight is, right? I'm very respectful. If, you know, I can take a hint. If they're not into the conversation, I close it down and put my earphones on. But I don't know. It's like I've had some really interesting conversations with people on the plane.
Have you like forged business deals with your seatmate?
I've made friendships. I've made friends on the plane. Not lifelong ones, but it's a bizarre thing, right? Like you walk on, you sit next to somebody, potentially you turn your chair into a bed, and you might even spend the night. You know, like it's a strange thing. You're like within a couple of feet of a complete stranger.
It's an intimate experience. I will say the one time, years ago, I was watching Charlie Wilson's War on a flight from Istanbul to New York, and there was an older New Yorker sitting next to me. And as I took off the headphones to go to the bathroom, he said, I don't mean to interrupt, but I was a congressman from New York, and Charlie Wilson was my best friend in Congress. If you've got any questions at the end of the movie, I haven't watched it, I don't want to, but I'll be happy to tell you what it was really like.
No way.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating.
And he said, did Charlie Wilson's office in the movie, was it just full of hot women? And I said, yeah. He said, but you know, Charlie pretended that was just because he was a Lothario, but it was rather when he wanted to have meetings with people and he said, do you want to have a meeting in my office? All the old guys in Congress were like, sure, we'll come meet in Charlie Wilson's office.
No way.
So it worked on both levels. And he said Charlie was such a smart man and so much more strategic than history's made him.
And now you've got really good cocktail party chatter just because you chatted up your seatmate.
I mean, don't scrub your face again when someone says they chat up their seatmate. I think it's a good thing.
We should give you a point for that because I've benefited by that.
And I'm just going to say, the only times that I remember the conversations that I had with my seatmates is when I was young, traveling solo and making up my like fantasy life for the person that I was sitting next to. I'd like invent where I would like to be in 10 years and pretend that that was actually the life that I was living now. And it was it was really fun to try different things on for size.
Oh, that's exciting.
But this was something that I did when I was like a teenager.
You're not doing it now, are you?
No, not anymore. But but I do remember doing that. And that was kind of, it was something that took the pain out of traveling solo. I've never liked to travel solo.
It doesn't even have to be in the plane the other day. I got in an Uber the other day.
Who did you pretend to be?
Well, I didn't realize, but I'd hit the Uber pull button and suddenly the driver pulled over to one side and I'm looking out the window thinking, this isn't where I want to go. What's he doing stopping here? And then the door opened and someone got in. I was like, oh, hello. So you can even have
celebrities. They're just like us.
Exactly. Someone else is telling that story, except they're excited that it was Curtis Stone. Okay, Curtis, you touched a little bit on traveling around Europe when you were younger and traveling on a budget. You know, now you're lucky enough you can travel nicely, but you've lived at both ends. I know your dad gave you some advice about sort of emergency funds and how to make sure you're cushioned when you travel.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because I think that was quite a beautiful piece of advice.
The day I left Australia, I was 21 at the time, he had some American dollars and he said, listen, mate, you can use these pretty much anywhere in the world. You know, I left with Australian dollars and I was going to Europe before winding up in Great Britain. And he said, you know, don't spend them. Just put them away in your little bag there that holds your passport and all the rest. I had one of those things that I think it went around my neck. But, you know, a lot of people have those. What are they called? Fanny packs?
Fanny packs.
It's such a hard word for an Australian.
We are believers in fanny packs around here.
Also for a British person, British listeners, Australian listeners, also find it innately hilarious.
Yeah. You know, so I tucked that money away and I didn't use it for a couple of years. And one time I found myself in a pinch in Austria, actually. I planned to go to Prague. I didn't realize I needed a visa. I got to the airport with my buddies. They all sort of had already checked onto their flight and they said to me, where's your visa? I didn't have one. But I wasn't, one of my friends was like, well, I'll come with you. You know, let's go somewhere else. So we ended up flying to Vienna. And of course, with the expense of the flight, I got to Vienna and ran out of money and didn't have any cash available at the ATM. And I remembered that $200 that Dad gave me and it got me home. So it was a nice little gesture from him.
Oh.
I think to remember that American dollars are still a global currency, yes, in the sense that they're recognized. They may not be an official global currency. You know, you can't spend them in a store in London.
Right.
But if you caught in a bind, American cash is a get-out-of-jail-free card almost anywhere.
100%. Right. 100%.
Metaphorically speaking. We're not just telling bribe the cops.
Although, I have to say, I have a tendency to carry foreign currency in my wallet. I have... generally one bill from every country.
Oh, really?
I get printed currency in. And I don't get printed currency everywhere that I go because I don't find that you need cash everywhere anymore.
Less and less.
But when I have a little bit left over, I'll keep one bill in my wallet just so that when I'm at the grocery store, I have like a little memento that makes me happy in the middle of my crazy chore running day. But I will say I have gotten out of binds with that too, specifically because people don't know the value of those currencies. I have given away like a dollar worth of pesos or something to somebody who was trying to scam me just to get them off my back. And they thought that they were taking something away that was a lot more valuable.
Again, I feel like we're seeing your underbelly today. I feel like it's all the sneaky things you do.
I like that. Nice trick.
This is the holiday spirit coming out, I guess.
So tell us, Curtis, tell us about an embarrassing experience you've had while traveling, something that you learned from but that you wouldn't repeat. What's the biggest travel mistake you made and what did it teach you, other than not having a visa when all your friends did?
Well, I have a ridiculously embarrassing story to tell. It happened to me in Australia when I was young. Well, I wasn't that young. I was maybe 26 or 27. There was a thing called the Good Food and Wine Show. And I went back. I can't believe I'm about to tell this story on the radio. I was coming down with something. I had a really late night. I was dating a girl at the time. We'd gone back up to our room. I fell asleep. I'm a really heavy sleeper. And I woke up and went to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Well, it was probably early morning. And I walked out the wrong door. And I walked straight out into the hallway. And she was passed out asleep. And I was naked in the hallway. Oh. I banged and banged and banged on the door. She wouldn't wake up. And I was making such a ruckus, banging on the door. I was on my hands and knees, screaming at a little crack. Okay. I ran, and then I heard a door down the hallway open. I ran down the hall. I ran away from the door that I was trying to get into my room to just get away from this person. Until this happened to me, I didn't understand the term panic. Okay. When you actually panic for the first time in your life, you do all sorts of crazy stuff. I ran down and I ran into an elevator that was, by the
naked.
Naked. Four mirrored walls. You see 100 of your naked self. I ran in there. The doors closed. I went down a level. I got out of the elevator. I ran back searching for the stairs. This is a true story. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't sound it. I found the stairs. I got back up to my floor. I still couldn't rouse her and wake her up. And I found the laundry that had robes in it. But I ran into an attendant in there with no clothes on, and she handed me a robe. I apologized profusely. I ran back to my room. She came up and she let me in. I got into bed and I fell asleep. And the next morning, I was too embarrassed to even tell my girlfriend what had happened. I woke up. She was up making a cup of tea the next morning. And she said, I sat up out of bed and I was like, you won't believe what happened last night. And she said, what? And I told her the story. And she didn't believe me until we walked back down across the lobby and all the bellhops were standing there giggling as we walked out of the hotel.
They knew.
They knew.
I wanted whatever she took to fall asleep that night. Right? I want that.
I have to say that if you you know when people talk about that nightmare you have where you're in a play and you're naked on stage? I think if you travel a lot the way we do, the nightmare I have is exactly what happened to you. Going to the loo in the middle of the night and opening the wrong door.
I live that nightmare.
That is my panic nightmare. And the fact, I thought it had never happened. I thought it was absurd to even be worried about it. So thank you for haunting my dream.
Can you believe it? I mean, I haven't told that story. I've never told it publicly, by the way, but I haven't told it at all for a decade. And it's giving me the chills.
I'd say we'd keep your secret safe, but by definition,
Travel Genius exclusive. I think we're going to flag that.
So talk to us. So that trip is seared in your memory for one very good reason.
Oh my goodness.
Have you ever taken a trip that's totally changed your life or that's stuck with you in a more positive way?
It has. It was the trip that my wife and I fell in love on. I mean, we were already dating and happy and, you know, everything was good. But we went to Turks and Caicos.
Okay.
I didn't have a crazy desire to go to be perfectly honest, but we got to this little paradise. We spent 4 days walking up and down a beach. We scuba dived together and we just, you know, we hung out. We did nothing really. And we totally fell in love. And I came back. I sort of left thinking, oh, yeah, she's my girlfriend and everything's good. And I came back thinking, I'm going to marry this girl and have children with her.
Oh.
Do you go back?
Never been back. We should
I think
we?
You need to plan a return.
Yes, all right. I will. Okay.
I would tell you, Turks and Caicos, there's a wonderful new resort called Sail Rock, which is opened on the South Caicos Islands. So you take a little puddle jumper from Provo, and it is idyllically deserted, and the water is very warm and shallow, so the water sports are very easy, but you can also snorkel and dive, so it's great to be active, but you're very hidden away. I loved it. Sweet. It's one of my favorite. I even paid for that vacation. It wasn't a work trip, and it was well worth it.
Mark, you say that like...
Hold on, did I not get a ding for my naked and afraid story?
But what's the tip, Curtis?
Put your clothes on before you walk to the bathroom.
I think your tip is don't sleep naked in a hotel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kudos to Mark for spinning a really, really hysterical, embarrassing story into a life lesson that we can all take away. Curtis, what is on the docket for you for holiday travel? Do you have something that you do every year? I know you have philanthropic commitments on an annual basis. You can tell us about that. I don't know if you leverage them for a getaway.
I don't. We take it in turns to spend Christmas either in Australia or here in the US. So we try and keep all the parents happy as much as best we can. And this year we were going to Australia, but at the last minute we decided there's just been too much travel this year. So we're not going anywhere. We're going to stay home. Lindsay and I are really involved in Adopt Together, which is a charity that helps create families. You know, it's a crowdfunding organization. The truth is there's a ton of people that want to adopt, but it's expensive and there's a lot of red tape. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, over 100,000 orphans in the world. So trying to put those two things together seems like a pretty simple thing to do, but there's not a lot of help out there. So Adopt Together, someone that does an incredible job of it. So we've been working all year with them. We did a big gala called the Baby Ball for them this year. And we spent a good chunk of, I do a thing called Commit to One, where I commit all my energy and philanthropic abilities for 1 year to one charity. And then I change it each year. So this year was Adopt Together, and we've had a great year with them.
All right, Curtis, you've walked us through basically a long list of amazing trips, some more embarrassing and some more fruitful. But talk to us about 2019, what you've got on your bucket list that you want to cross off in the next year.
So our restaurant, Maud, we develop a menu for our restaurant based on a travel adventure. So we go to a different wine region every 3 months, and I take the team with me, and we go and we discover incredible food and wines. And then we sort of translate that into a delicious menu at the restaurant. So I've been doing lots of travel for that. We went back to Western Australia. I've been to Europe a number of times, but I really want to go to Central America, South America, you know, Central America sort of personally, but then South America for the more R&D trip. So Chile's on my list. Argentina, it's a long answer. I want to go everywhere. There's so much to
say. Probably the best meal that I had in 2018, this was a total surprise for me, was in Panama City.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I could have never predicted it, but I took a trip to Panama to check out a new hotel off the coast. It's a private archipelago, okay? This is like a crazy concept. This billionaire owns 14 islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Panama, and that's where I was going. But on my layover, it was like a day-long layover in Panama City, I got a table at this tiny chef's counter called Donde Jose, and it was like 8 seats. The chef serves you every course.
Wow.
Super creative, very much in keeping with kind of the indigenous cuisines of Central America, borrowing from different cultures that have been there for, you know, thousands of years, as well as modern ingredients. And
oh, wow.
It was really
so
spectacular.
I think we've solved your travel conundrum.
Yeah.
2019. Panama City.
Let's do it.
It was a runaway surprise for me.
Okay, Curtis, I have to say thank you so much. I want to travel with you. I want you to be picking my room service for me. But anyway, thank you for joining us and for sharing your amazing tips. And I will never sleep naked in a hotel again.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
That's nice. That is clearly the takeaway today. Curtis, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, Nikki, so let's tally it up. How did Curtis score?
Curtis might have broken a record. I don't know. We'd have to go back and find out. But he got 5 points, and I'm kind of being generous because we earned some of those points ourselves, Mark. But whatever. This episode, we got some really great hacks, including how to get a chef's personal recommendations for great restaurants to eat in a foreign city, how to hack the room service menu and always go off the menu in a way that is beneficial to your waistline. 3 was always ask for no garnishes when you do order room service to ingratiate yourself with the kitchen chefs. That was your tip, Mark.
That was my point.
I know. I'm giving it to you.
Okay.
And come now. And 4 was always chat with your airplane seatmate. A totally surprising tip for me and something that I generally do the very opposite of. And 5, don't sleep naked, particularly in hotel rooms.
So I say well done, Curtis, and well done me.
That's well done you, Mark.
This has been another episode of Travel Genius. I'm Mark Elwood.
And I'm Nikki Eckstein. Do you have a favorite travel tip or hack that you'd like to share? Or maybe you've got thoughts on some of the tips that we discussed today. Either way, let us know.
You can call us on, now write this down, 646-324-3490. And maybe we'll even play your tip on the show. You can also find us on Twitter, of course. I'm at Mark J. Elwood with a K and 2 L's.
And I'm at Nikki Eckstein with 3 K's and no C's. If you're a fan of Travel Genius, please take a moment to rate and review us. It helps new listeners find us.
This episode was produced by Toph Forges and Francesca Levy as Bloomberg's head of podcast. Thanks for listening.